Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Sitcast. Very happy that you guys are joining us today. Today we have a very special guest in Sarpreet Singh, who is one of the speakers for the Sikh Research Institute. We are going to talk about Sarpreet Singh himself, and then we're going to dive right into the play that is capturing a lot of Sikhs and non-Sikhs' attentions around the world. The play is called Gultar's Mime. It focuses on 1984. It focuses on the anti-Sikh pogroms in 1984 in Delhi. And we'll talk about how the play came about, why is it relevant to Sikhs today, and how can we relate to it and do something about it even after 30 years or 31 years since 1984. It's a fascinating journey of the play, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So let's dive right in.
Sarpreet Singh Ji, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with us today. Just for people that are listening that don't know a little bit about you, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at the Sikh Research Institute.
Thank you, Manpreet. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm a writer, commentator, playwright based in Boston. I've been writing for several years while also pursuing a career in technology. For the past several years, I've been focused on writing from a Sikh perspective, and I've been working on fictional pieces, several nonfiction articles that have been published mostly on the web. And most recently, I have been involved with a theatrical production called Gultar's Mime, which we are going to be talking about today. My role at Sikri is twofold. I am responsible for creative programming at Sikri, which, by the way, was the organization that presented and continues to present Gultar's Mime worldwide. And my charter is to develop more programming of that nature, spanning theater, film, various media, bringing stories about Sikhs to light and presenting them in various different contexts. The other role I have at Sikri is managing Project Sikha, which is our initiative to essentially build a Khan Academy for the Sikh community.
So let's dive right into it. That was a great, great intro. Tell me about Gultar's Mime. I know you said you had a technology background. Tell me about how you created Gultar's Mime, and why is it called Gultar's Mime? Because I think that's a different and unique name for a Sikh play.
Absolutely. So Gultar's Mime was actually, the play was created by Meher Kaur, who's a senior at Smith College and is also my daughter. The play is based on a poem that I wrote roughly 25 years ago. I came to the U.S. as a young man a few years after the events of 1984. And when I came to the U.S. from India, I all of a sudden had access to a lot of material that was not very easy to find in India, most notably alternate narratives about 1984 with respect to what you would read in mainstream Indian media. So the narrative in mainstream Indian media was that after Indira Gandhi was assassinated, there was a spontaneous outbreak of violence in Delhi and various other places in India, which was characterized as a quote-unquote riot. And that is the line that was echoed by most media outlets in India, either as a direct result of control by the government or by voluntary censorship that the Indian press was happy to impose in the interest of, were willing to impose because of the so-called national interest. I happened upon a few documents in my university library of all places. I found a long article written by Madhu Kishwar, who edited a progressive magazine called Manushi. In sharp contrast to what was written by most other journalists, Madhu Kishwar fearlessly wrote about what had happened in Delhi. documenting in great detail the role of the Congress Party machine of the late Prime Minister Indira Gandhi in organizing the massacre, and the very active role that the police played by encouraging the people who were perpetrating violence, turning a blind eye, often abetting and aiding them rather than coming to the help of Sikhs who were being attacked. A second document that I got access to was the Slim Report, which is commonly referred to as the Black Book. This was a report penned by two human rights organizations in India, the People's Union for Civil Liberties and the People's Union for Democratic Rights. It was prepared under the aegis of Justice Tharkunde, who's a retired high court judge and a widely respected jurist in India. So a fact-finding team, which was composed entirely of non-Sikhs, fanned out in Delhi in the aftermath of the violence and painstakingly documented what had happened, who had attacked the Sikhs, who had instigated the people who had done the attacking, and very clearly named the Congress Party and special prominent politicians based on eyewitness testimony. So that was the second report that I read, which again gave me a very different view of what had happened in 1984 as opposed to what I had been exposed to in India. So the actual play came out of an academic paper that I read. The poem came out of an academic paper that I read by Dr. Veena Das, who's an anthropologist. So what had happened was that a lot of the survivors of the 1984 massacre had been relocated to this, I'll call it a ghetto in Delhi called Tilak Vihar. And Dr. Das, as a social scientist and anthropologist, had been doing field work in Tilak Vihar, following some of the children who had survived the massacre and documenting their stories. So in one of her papers, titled, I believe, Voices of Children, she recounted the stories of some of these children, and one of them in particular really struck me. This was the story of a young boy whose name was Avtar, who was deaf and mute, whose father was lynched before his eyes during the massacre. So this child, being deaf and mute, obviously could not articulate his pain verbally. What he would do is, every time he would get agitated, he would essentially use his body to act out what had happened to his father. So sometimes he would pretend to be his father, sometimes he would become the mob that was lynching his father, sometimes he would become a Congress politician by raising his palm and showing the electoral symbol of the Congress Party. The account was devastating. There were several other accounts. One of them was of a young girl whose father was burned alive in front of her eyes. And apparently this child refused to let go of her father's hand while he was being burned alive, much to the consternation of the mob, which was actually trying to get her away from her father. And apparently the mob, after the attack, was very ashamed because they saw the courage of this child. And I guess what they had done, the enormity and horror of what they had done, finally seeped in when the child's actions registered. So these true stories, coupled with what I had read in Madhu Kishwar's article and the PUCL and PUDR human rights report, created a tremendous ferment in my mind. And what poured out as a result of that was essentially Kultar's Mime. So Kultar's Mime is a fictionalized rendering or retelling of the story of young Avtar and several of the other children who Dr. Das encountered in Tilak Vihar. So because it was fictionalized, the name of Avtar was changed to Kultar, and the poem was written about 25 years ago. So it just sat there. I made a few attempts to publish it right then, and you know, I got busy with my technology career and really didn't do anything with it. locally in Boston, you know, I would often be invited to speak at remembrance events around 1984, and sometimes I would read excerpts from the poem, and invariably a bunch of young children that I've been mentoring over the years would be present at a lot of these events. One of those children was my own daughter, Meher Kaur, who in a certain sense grew up with the poem. So Meher Kaur grew up to have a keen interest in theater, and when she started Smith College, she was casting about for a project. She wanted to create a play from scratch, and then she had an idea that she would take this poem and turn it into a play. Now, my initial reaction was that this was a rather difficult thing to do, given the fact that it was, after all, a poem. But she persisted, and a couple of years ago created the play, found a cast of young actors, and actually put up one performance. So this was in the summer of 2013. About 7 or 8 months later, I was in conversation with Harinder Singh, who runs the Sikh Research Institute. And out of that, I guess somewhat serendipitously, came the notion of reviving the play. And, you know, we set a modest agenda of pulling together a cast, putting the production together, and then taking the play to Toronto, Ottawa, where there was a conference that was going to happen. We figured we'd have a performance in Boston and a couple of performances in New York and New Jersey. So Sikri came forward and offered a platform to put the play together. And we set out to pull the production together with the fairly modest goal of 5 performances in the fall of 2014. Well, about a year later, we've had 36 performances. We've been to 4 countries across 3 continents. And the play, it wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that it has really revived the conversation about 1984, which was really starting to disappear.
Wow, what a great background on the play. I mean, you know, I was very fortunate enough, I guess, to escape the genocide in 1984. I came here in May of 1984. So before all that happened, you know, I was in America. So I didn't really get to witness it, or my family actually, firsthand. And unfortunately, I still haven't seen your play yet. But when you were talking, I was thinking about when you wrote the poem, and then your daughter kind of revived the play, and now you have this play and you went around the world with it. When you guys were writing the play, did you, you know, 1984 is a very sensitive topic, could be provocative, it's very emotional. Did you keep that in mind when you wrote the play? Did you say, you know, we shouldn't say this, or we shouldn't say that? Or was it like straight from the source and you're just like, we're just going to tell it how it really was?
So honestly, while the play was being created, there wasn't even a moment's worth of hesitation about pulling any punches, not telling it like the way it was. So the first version of the play was very faithful to the original text of the poem and really addressed everything that the poem addresses. Subsequent to that, we, again with some serendipity, stumbled upon a really powerful poem written by an extremely well-known Hebrew poet called Haim Bialik. Now, this particular poem was written in the early 1900s. Now, at that time, Bialik was a young man. He was actually a student studying in Odessa. And he was sent to this town called Kishinev, which is in the modern-day Republic of Moldova, but in those days used to be the capital of the Russian province of Bessarabia. So what had happened in Kishinev in 1903 was that, in a manner that was very similar to what had happened in Delhi, you know, there was violence unleashed upon the Jewish community of Kishinev without provocation as a result of rumor, innuendo, libel I remember getting goosebumps when I first read Bialik's poem. This was after the first version of Kultar's Mind, the play, had already been performed in the summer of 2013. And the reason for that was I was struck by the similarities between Kultar's Mime and In the City of Slaughter, which is Bialik's poem. Of course, you know, I'm a relatively unknown writer, and Bialik is a very well-known writer, so the comparison is not a very good one in that sense. However, it's not surprising that the imagery of the two poems is rather similar, because it does talk about very, very similar events. So just like in Kultar's Mime, the reader is shown what happened to the victims of 1984. Similarly, using very powerful language, Bialik shows the destruction of the pogrom of 1903, I beg your pardon, and the devastation that it brought upon the heads of the Jewish population of Kishinev. And Mihirkor and I discussed the poem, got very excited about it. She had already made an artistic choice to cast essentially non-Sikh or even non-South Asian actors in the play. And the artistic conceit used was that this is a group of Western artists who want to tell the story of the suffering of the people. So in its second iteration, these Western artists became Jewish artists. And we incorporated certain lines from Bialik's poem in the early part of the play and then in the last part of the play as well. And the premise essentially became that here is a group of young Jewish artists who start out by wanting to commemorate the massacre of Kishinev and honor the victims of Kishinev. And as they undertake this journey, they happen upon the story of 1984. And in a very powerful moment of, quote, embracing the other, they decide that telling a similar story of pain where the violence targeted somebody other than their community would make a very powerful statement. And, you know, if we step back and think about this, is this not what the ethos of the Khalsa is ultimately? You know, we are intended to be the protectors of the weak. We are intended to raise our voices against oppression, no matter where it rears its ugly head, no matter who the perpetrator is, no matter who the victim is. So this notion of non-Sikhs and non-South Asians telling the story of Delhi became a very powerful element of the play. And this is a sort of long response to a fairly simple question that you asked, but the point that I want to make is that through the combining of the stories of Delhi and Kishinev, this play operates now at a completely different level. It is no longer about just the Sikhs talking about, you know, an injustice that was perpetrated upon them 30 years ago. Now it becomes a very universal human story, which emphasizes that there is unfortunately this global pattern of violence that has been with us forever, which continues until today, where people are targeted simply because of who they are. And just like this horror and violence transcends geography, culture, and time, so does compassion. Because as long as we care about each other's stories and tell each other's stories, in the end, there is hope. And that's what the play is really all about eventually. It's about suffering and it's about compassion.
Great. I mean, you know, that is what caught my attention when I first heard about it, that you cast, I guess, only white actors. And I thought, you know, as a marketer myself, I'm like, you know, that'll definitely get you attention. And that will definitely, you know, it's a great marketing tool as well. How has the audience responded to that? Have they embraced that? Have you gotten any pushback, or people think, because it was a totally, I would think, a radical idea doing a a play on an emotional subject like 1984 and casting only white actors?
Indeed. So before I answer your question, let me fill in one small detail, which is relevant to my answer. So as I said earlier, the artistic conceit is that these are actually young artists who are going to tell the story of a massacre. And the device that's used to, you know, make that real is the action, so to speak, takes place in an art gallery. So these young artists have actually created these eight paintings, which depict the stories of the children, that the stories that they'll be telling in the play. So these were actually original pieces of artwork that were commissioned by Meher Kaur, and they were painted by Evan Lee Davis, a young artist who attends Smith College as well. So the way the play is presented is there are these, you know, there's this young collective of Western artists who have created this artwork, and then in the art gallery, they're going to tell the stories of the children. So at no point are they actually claiming to portray Sikh children. They are portraying themselves, artists, who are using the art as the backdrop to tell the story of the children. So in with that device, it works very well. You know, it it sort of makes logical sense to the audience. What's happening on stage, you know, is very real to them because now it's a bunch of artists telling a story. In terms of the audience reaction, I would say it's been overwhelmingly positive. And the way we know this, of course, is that we have a talk back. We have a talk back after every show where the audience gets the opportunity to ask questions of me, Meher Kaur, whenever she's available, and the cast. And I'll tell you this, 90% of the time the audience has spontaneously commented on this and said that, you know, they initially thought that this was slightly strange, you know, Caucasian actors, you know, supposedly portraying young Sikh children, but once they understand the device and once they see the power of, again, embracing someone else's pain, the point is immediately understood and the audience really, really appreciates it. We've had a couple of instances, and, you know, I'm saying this a little tongue-in-cheek, we've had a very earnest audience member get up in Toronto, if I remember correctly, and say, you've robbed South Asian actors of the opportunity to be in a wonderful play by casting Caucasian actors. And, you know, the tongue-in-cheek part is that, you know, this was always a very conscious decision. And it's very much sort of embedded into the structure of the play. That's how the play was written. So by and large, yes, the audience, you know, understands what's going on. And really, there's this whole new layer that's added to the play by virtue of the fact that it's not a group of young Sikh actors telling the story, but it's people who have nothing in common with the Sikhs, have no understanding of the culture of the Sikhs, and yet they're able to tell the story in such a powerful manner with such integrity. And here again, you know, I have to acknowledge that my cast has been absolutely superb. And to them, it's simply not been a quote unquote job. You know, all of them came to the play with zero knowledge of Sikhs or Sikhi. And they went through a very extensive dramaturgical process in which they were introduced not just to the history of 1984, but to the history of the Sikh Panth, so that they could really understand how, you know, what aspects of our history and our character created the circumstances that led to the violence in 1984. And to their credit, and, you know, the actors were so emotionally invested in the play, I think that was apparent to audiences everywhere. And I think that made acceptance pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, no, I've heard many, many great things about the play. You know, talking about people getting emotional or thinking that, you know, pretty much when I talked to people that saw the play and I just couldn't see it when it was in New York, But they were like, you know, most of them were like, yeah, it's great. It's great. It was awesome. But I did see one reaction, like, why is he, going back and talking about things in the past and in 84 and, rousing up those emotions again? Have you gotten anything like that? And what would be your response to that?
Yeah, so marginally, there have been a few performances where people have come up to me and said, you know, this is very powerful, but don't you fear that you will open up old wounds? Don't you fear that you will get people excited? Maybe some young hotheads will get fired up and will look for revenge and so on. And, you know, my response to that comes at a couple of different levels. First and foremost, this is not a play that shakes a fist at any group of people, blames, you know, anyone, a community, far from it. What it does say, and this is completely corroborated by independent human rights reports that are available for anyone to read, that this was no spontaneous riot. It was a carefully organized massacre. So everything presented in the play is very factually correct. The play doesn't have a strident tone at all. It is really about, in the end, the play is about compassion. It's about embracing somebody else's pain. And the audience gets that. In terms of why this was done 30 years after the fact, you know, we would have to delve a little bit into Sikh history to understand that and really put this in context. You know, several hundred years ago, in the 18th century, the Sikh community faced tremendous repression at the hands of tyrants like, you know, Zakaria Khan, Mir Mannu, Massar Angar, Ahmad Shah Abdali. The names go on and on, you know, the Vadda Kallukara, Chota Kallukara. So more than 200 years have passed, almost 300 years have passed. When so many innocent Sikhs were slaughtered and tortured for no reason other than the fact that they were Sikhs, and the Sikh Panth hasn't forgotten. And the extent to which we haven't forgotten is embodied in the Ardas, because every time we stand up to pray, our thoughts go back to these innocents who were massacred and tortured 300 years ago for no reason at all other than the fact that they believed in a particular faith. Well, the question I would ask then is that if we haven't forgotten those innocents who suffered in similar ways 300 years ago, how could we ever dream of forgetting the innocents who suffered 30 years ago? So from my perspective, this play, and hopefully hundreds of other efforts that will follow like these, are not intended to excite anyone, to point fingers at anyone. They are simply an expression of who we are. There has been no justice. There has been no closure. We haven't moved on as a community. We haven't had that opportunity to move on. And besides, as I said earlier, this is our ethos. We don't forget our innocents who were butchered and tortured 300 years ago. We're certainly not going to forget the ones who suffered the same fate 30 years ago. So that's my answer to anyone who wonders why it's meaningful to talk about this 30 years after the fact.
No, I love that. I love that. And, you know, in just as a last question, so what's next? What's next in Kultar's mind? Where is it going to be? What are the plans for the future?
Certainly, I'm happy to talk about that. So Kultar's mind is actually now in rehearsals, we have a mostly brand new cast because some of the original cast members have gone on to other projects. Meher Kaur is back from college in the summer. She's pulling the play together, and we will start touring in September of this year. So we have our first performance planned at Northeastern University in Boston on the 9th of September. We are looking to add other performances in the U.S. in later on in September. October is a very travel-heavy month for us. Early in October, we go to British Columbia, where we will perform in Surrey, and we will also perform in Vancouver. Vancouver is particularly exciting because we will be performing at the Norman Rothstein Theater, which is a part of the Jewish Community Center. We had earlier performed at the Toronto Jewish Community Center as well, which is absolutely wonderful. From Vancouver, we will come back and quickly travel to Scotland, where Kultar's Mime will be presented in Edinburgh at Scottish Parliament. Last December, we actually had a wonderful performance at Westminster at British Parliament. So it's wonderful to be going to Scotland and doing the same thing again. And then we have another performance planned in Glasgow. We're looking at other potential performances in the UK as well. And we come back and fly to Utah, where we will be performing at the World Parliament of Religions. This is the largest interfaith gathering in the world, where every 5 years, 10,000 people come together to talk about various issues. This year, they will be talking about issues of justice, issues of climate change. They will also be talking about genocide and violence. So the world will be talking about genocide under the leadership of the Dalai Lama, a couple of other Nobel laureates, you know, global activists from all over the world, and Kultar's Mime will be right there telling the story of the massacre of 1984 and the pogrom of 1903. So after October, we do have plans to tour further in the U.S. and Canada. Some of those performances are being put in place right now, but we plan to travel to a couple of additional cities in early November and a couple more cities in early December. In fact, we are actively booking more shows right now. So if any of your listeners are interested in bringing Kultar's Mime to their city, they should certainly get in touch with us. The best way to contact us is through our email. It's km1984@sikri.org. So in a nutshell, we have the fall tour being actively planned at the moment, and we will be touring from September through mid-December or so.
That's awesome. I mean, I think all the dates you mentioned will be on the Sikh Research Institute website as well. So that's great. I wish the play all success. Much success, and I hope it goes on for a long time. So, you know, I really appreciate your time on this podcast. If someone wants to reach out to you, where can they reach out to you specifically to talk about anything Sikhi related or the play itself?
At Sarpreet Singh would be the best place to get in touch with me.
At Sarpreet Singh, is that Twitter?
Yep.
All right, awesome. So I really appreciate your time, Sarpreet Singh, and I'm sure hopefully everyone that's listening today will research more about Kultar's Mime and bring it to their city. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was a pleasure.